grew up in a small town called Ipoh in Malaysia, and you know, realizing that I'm queer and I wanted to make music and art that is authentic and representative of who I am as an artist. Since I was little, I worked really hard, you know, and it's also being Chinese, we're very like, I have like a tiger mom who always like would push me to study and like, you know, being number two is not good enough. So it was like years of a lot of trauma, you know, wanting to excel in school. I'm sure like, I don't know if you can relate to it.
I relate so hard to it.
Yeah, it's always like, you know, okay, yeah, you got this score, but what are the other kids doing? There's always like many years of that. But that has actually taught me to work really hard in school. And I always knew that when I was little, I wanted to leave and move away from Malaysia. Even though I'm really proud of where I come from and where I grew up, I just know that to express myself authentically as a queer person, I wanted to leave Malaysia. So I worked really hard, got a scholarship to then study in Sydney. Otherwise, it would have been so expensive for international students to, you know, a lot of people like, you know, look at international students. But, you know, it's a hard journey. It's for the family and for people to move to a Western country and sort of adapt and like be part of the community. So I had many years of that. While pursuing music, I was working 2 to 3 jobs. I was performing, learning music, and going to uni. And yes, I've kind of like always been making music. But it wasn't until like maybe 2020 during COVID when I had the chance to really sit down and think about what kind of music I want to make and how I want to present myself as an artist. So I started making electronic music that is has got influences from, you know, people say world music, but it's really just like non-Western music. So I use a lot of traditional Asian, Southeast Asian soundscapes in my production. And I started performing in Chinese operatic drag makeup, sort of like fusing the electronic world and traditional East Southeast Asian music, and also fusing traditional Chinese opera makeup with cyberpunk type of makeup. So that's how this aesthetic and how my sound has developed over the years.
Yeah, why did you kind of choose these particular areas of cyberpunk and hyperpop and even the Chinese operatic drag?
Yeah, this is a fantastic question. So basically, when I in my early years of making music, I've overcome a lot of challenges, and I still do. You know, I feel like the Australian music industry and arts industry is getting more diverse and aware of diversity and inclusivity. But when I first got here, I always used to feel like, you know, the token queer, especially token Asian, being the intersection of all those things of being queer and being a person of color. So for many years, I used to feel like I'm the only one or one of the very few, and feel represented. So one day and music scared me, to be honest. I kind of stepped away from music because the music industry is tough. You know, I think it's sometimes for mental health reasons, it's good to take a break. And then I kind of went back into it thinking, if people can only remember me as being gay, being Asian, I'll make sure they remember me for it. So I think... So I think it's a journey of self-acceptance, first and foremost, learning to embrace who I really am authentically, and then accepting who I am, and then through my live performances, because the things that made me different in music was embraced by the cabaret performance art and drag scene. So I started to go into that space, and like they taught me to love myself and like, you know, have all those makeup elements and performance elements in my live shows. And then I started to make songs that are, you know, in the electronic. I'm a DJ as well, so I make electronic music. But then I'm like, hey, like, you know, these sounds I'm really inspired by growing up watching, like, you know, Hong Kong drama series, and like just growing up in Malaysia, being exposed to like all these different sounds, and started to experiment and incorporate them into my production.
Yeah, being South Asian myself, I relate with a lot of what you're saying. It's not just an economic resource that we tend to lack being from multicultural communities and immigrant communities, but also this social kind of permission to just be in the music? Do you find that that kind of affected you as well?
Being in the music industry?
Yeah, you know, like with being South Asian, I find that a lot of people have told me no because, well, it's not the thing you do. You become a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer. That's kind of the traditional pathway set out for you. Did you find a lot of those same barriers as Southeast Asian?
Yeah, I think for me, a lot of that actually is from my own family. I'm sure you can relate because, like, you know, we're always, like, I grew up playing classical piano and violin, but was never meant to be a career option. It was never, like, it was always meant to be a hobby. And even all these years of doing arts and music, you know, I remember my dad once said to me, "You're just wasting your time." That's what he literally said to me on the way to an audition. I was like, well, great, thanks, Dad. yeah, so for many years, coming from a family, it's always meant to be like, you know, music's a hobby, something on the side. It wasn't until, like, you know, I always go back to 2020 around COVID time, that's really changed the world and it changed me. And I was like, this is when I really want to do what I'm currently doing. And it's taken many years of practice and a lot of resilience to now be able to do music full-time. I say full-time as because I'm a self-employed musician. I make music for live shows and I'm a DJ as well. I just played at the Mardi Gras official after party last weekend. So it's taken many years for that to happen. So I'm very grateful for that. But having said that, I feel like, you know, it's also great to have those things. I know it was said to, like, scare us to have a full-time job as a backup, but I'm really glad I have that university education outside music because there's no shame in working a second or third job, and I feel like a lot of musicians do because we all know that, like, Sydney, Australia, is ridiculously expensive. You know, I'm sure Melbourne as well. Yeah. So it's been good to have that to pay my bills, you know.
But it's really awesome to see how far you've come being in Big Sound and putting out all this really great, awesome music. It's really, really cool to see. And speaking of being queer and Asian in the music scene, can you tell me where this moniker of the Gaysian Empress of Sydney came from?
I think it's like a bit of an alter ego, you know, because I'm a queer person. Outside drag, I do present as genderqueer or a lot of times as, like, you know, as a gay man. And a lot, you know, it's also like and I feel like that's okay because in a lot of situations you might want to be less queer presenting for your safety reasons because we do live in a very cis heteronormative society. So for me, like, the Gaysian Empress, I started saying, hey, like, you know, like, it's like an alter ego when I put on my Chinese operatic makeup. I just become this character. And for me, the Gaysian Empress is a genderless being. I use they, them when I'm in drag, you know. So I created this alter ego. I always feel like it elevates me. And I feel like a lot of it has also got to do with, like, as, you know, queer Asians, especially as who presents as a gay Asian person in a gay scene, a lot of times we have a lot of, like, stereotypes placed on us, on our bodies, you know, where, like, you know, in terms of, like, in a community, we're always, like, desexualized or hypersexualized. For me, like, the Gaysian Empress, when I become the Gaysian Empress, I immediately feel like it's a separate identity and I'm the Empress, you know, and people, like, perceive me differently. It's really interesting when I put on that face and have hair and makeup on. Immediately, it's like a confidence boost as well. It's really complex, you know. It's almost like I have two identities.
Yeah, I've been watching drag queens for quite a while now, and it's really amazing to see how that kind of persona just like makes you feel elevated in a way, I guess.
Yeah, I think especially for like a lot of queer people of color or queer people or people come from migrant families who, you know, I came here and didn't, you know, I mean, I've always spoken English, but it's taken years to, like, speak English properly and learning to adapt to the Australian culture. I think, like, for a lot of people who have gone through that or gone through challenges with their identity, you know, being able to then create a separate personality or being in drag that is, you know, that is beyond and all of that. It's quite empowering.
Is it like freeing in a way?
Yeah, it's quite liberating for me. Like, it's like the next step of my art. And very importantly as well, a huge part of doing it, apart from those, you know, reasons, is I wanted to show that drag has existed in so many cultures around the world. I believe, you know, like for me, like the Chinese opera, you know, it existed in China because women were not allowed to perform on stage. So like men would cross dress and perform as women. And I feel like in South Asian cultures, has there been like similar art practices like that? That's what I was told. Yeah,
we do have a lot of art practices like that as well. And I think our history with trans bodies and gender queerness is quite interesting. It's quite complex as well. Like, if you go into myth, I'm sure it's the same in Chinese culture and Malaysian culture. But if you go into myth, like, just the layers of complexity within identity and art is quite astounding.
Yeah. Definitely.
Let's talk about your latest track, is it? That released in February. It's called Ni Hao, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Ni Hao is you describe it as a tongue-in-cheek take on casual racism in Australia, and it's written in both English and Cantonese. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so this track, I wrote this track as, you know, it's like I was saying, it's a casual, it's a fun, humorous, tongue-in-cheek take on casual racism. And I feel like that's something that Australia does so well, is casual racism. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's a joke. Is it really racist, though? Right. Am I allowed to say this? No, it's really like I wanted to approach it from a kind of like a hilarious angle. Like the start of the song, if you hear it, it just is a repetition of, I see how you're doing, mate, but you answer me how. Because I feel like a lot of, a lot of people of Southeast or East Asian appearances, people might just assume that you're Chinese and you speak Chinese, and they just, does that mean we all look the same, right? And the other thing is, I've had so many instances where people just come up to random strangers would come up to me and say ni hao, or like just random, like Chinese sounding characters, words. So like, you know, so so this song is really inspired by all those events that happened after I moved here. And if you're a listener tuning in and you're wondering whether or not you can say ni hao to an Asian person, number one, like, don't assume all Asian people are Chinese. If they're Chinese, if you don't know them, don't. If you're friends with them and if they initiate a conversation with you, then you can certainly respond and say ni hao, which is like, hey, it's almost like good day in Chinese. Yeah, but only if you know someone and you're like included in a conversation like that.
Tell me about this decision to include both English and Cantonese, is it, in your lyrics?
Yeah, so I've actually been, I'm trilingual. I grew up in Malaysia speaking Chinese and also speak Malay. So for me, like, a few reasons why I do that. I feel like, you know, pop music sounds, or electronic music, I feel like it sounds really cool if there's other languages in it. And also I feel like it's part of my mission. it sounds like such a huge thing, but I feel like as an artist, I feel like it's my mission. I always think about what do I want to achieve with my music and my art, right? I feel like, you know, I want my music and my art to be able to demonstrate that just because something that is non-English and not a Western instrument, it can't be in the contemporary art and music scene in Australia. So I started singing in both English, Chinese, and sometimes Malay, and I also use that in my music production in general and also my live shows.
I'm really glad that you've made this track because I see and experience every day how casual racism plays out in this country, and I don't think a lot of people realize how casualized it is and how much it is in our everyday experience to have it around us constantly. So I'm really glad this track exists. Do you think, though, that there's space in the music industry in Australia for more artists from diverse backgrounds, but also for more works like this to come out that tackle these social issues head on?
I really hope so. I do feel like things are changing, and I really hope that it continues to change. When I played at Big Sound last year, of course, like people who present in my appearance performing in drag and a full face of makeup and doing electronic music, I was the only one. But there were a lot of, not a lot, but there were like definitely artists from diverse backgrounds and queer presenting or publicly out loud queer artists, at Big Sound. So I feel like, but Big Sound was also last year. I think the program is, it starts from the organization. You know, people need to proactively champion diversity and inclusion. And I also want to say that you can't just like take that box during Pride every year or during Mardi Gras or Midsummer, right? I feel like to be truly inclusive, the music industry needs to have people in the organization who are diverse, who are queer, who are people of color from top down. I think it's so important. But to answer your question, I feel like we are getting better, and I can only hope that we can continue raising and championing those artists.
I'm right there with you. And on that note, what's your advice to the young Asian, Southeast Asian queer artists out there?
Oh, I always say that I don't know if I'm the best person to give advice, because for a lot of things I'm still learning. You know, I don't have the answers to everything, but if someone were to ask me, apart from music, I'm also the founder of Worship Queer Collective. We've been around for about 3 years. We are a queer Asian artist-led collective that produces inclusive events, most of them taking place in Sydney, but we did a show in NAMM in Melbourne for Lunar New Year. So my advice would be, you know, if you're someone who is a migrant in this country, try to reach out to community. I know it's hard, but then you go through different communities before you find someone that you're comfortable and you share the same values, you know. I would say it's so important to have your chosen family. And you can always reach out to Worship Queer Collective if you are a queer Asian person, and that includes East Asian, Southeast Asian, South Asians. You can always reach out to Worship, because we have a family of queer Asians. And we hope to do more events in NARM as well, and hopefully expand our events to other parts of Australia.
It's absolutely amazing. I have to check that out. On that note, I'd like to give you some space to plug in any upcoming shows, releases, and your socials.
Yeah, of course. So Ni Hao just came out 2 weeks ago, so please stream it. I'm a self-made, self-managed artist, so please check out my music and stream it. We're hoping to come back to Melbourne in August to put on another queer Asian event. So follow me on Instagram, follow Worship Queer Collective. I'll be traveling with the crew and put on, you know, a queer Asian event at Footscray. So we're all very excited.